Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. This morning, from the sublime, which you just heard, to the ridiculous, sort of continuing in the tradition of April foolery with some comedy anyway, a brilliant reading of I'm Looking for Kadak by Harlan Ellison. And a movie review by Dan Persons. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. In my long history with the movies, one thing that I think I've learned is that love and immortality are mutually incompatible. Everywhere except the Twilight series, of course. That's the film series where love is eternal and beautiful. But then, you know, teenagers. Elsewhere, it's not such easygoing, and it's easy to see why. It's usually laid out in the films themselves. If you're an immortal and in love with a regular human, you are condemned to witness the aging and likely decrepitude of your lover, while you yourself stay young and probably beautiful, because these immortals tend to be beautiful in these films. If you're both immortal, then you are locked into a kind of stasis. Neither of you are going anywhere, so love eventually calcifies into something more reflexive than felt. Uncertainty, apparently, is an essential component of love. Any of us can die at any time. Maintaining awareness of that compels us to better appreciate the person at our side. Either way, because of that incompatibility, the portrayal of the immortal in film tends to wind up the same, styling them as a kind of rarefied, detached elite. The big difference being that in mainstream films, the immortals are cool and aloof, while in independent films, they're cool and aloof, and at night visit small European clubs to listen to obscure rock bands. The immortal of the new film Spring, Louise, played by Nadia Hilker, appears to be a conscious effort by filmmakers Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead to subvert that particular cliché. She's not a vampire, for one thing. In fact, what exactly she is remains an open question, something that I'll get back to in a few minutes. She holds down a regular day job, not surprisingly, as a genetic researcher. She's passionate, flirtatious, a little mercurial, with a sarcastic, occasionally cruel sense of humor. She's also Italian, living in a picturesque Italian seaside village who speaks English without any trace of accent, which director Benson, who also wrote the script, tries not completely successfully to explain away. But bottom line, for a person without the fear of death, with the weight of at least hundreds of years of living behind her, Louise is endearingly alive. Maybe a little too much so. As refreshing as Louise's persona is, it doesn't completely gel with the person who has lived centuries, a person who has witnessed and in some cases endured firsthand the pleasures and horrors of history. This, I think, is partly a flaw in trying to avoid the stock somber mien of such a character, and partly due to some inconsistency in the scripting. Despite Louise trying to conceal her true nature, once an expatriate American, Evan, played by Lou Taylor Pucci, and by the way, he's the actual protagonist of the film. Louise comes into his life, not vice versa. Once Evan falls in love with Louise and discovers her secret, she becomes perilously and publicly vociferous about herself and her experiences. In one scene late in the film, she compulsively recalls events from her past while sitting in a church as Evan tries to rein her in and her body begins to transform into her true nature. It's a clever scene in and of itself, but it doesn't help explain how Louise has managed to survive all these centuries. Nor is it particularly clear how Louise's nature ties in with her immortality. Benson and Moorhead try for something of a scientific explanation, having to do with character being a literal embodiment of the old ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny concept. But the explanation is so confusing that the film has to restate it three times before it begins to make any sense. And the moments when we see Louise transformed, which at various points involves fur, fangs, tentacles, and stingers, plus a killer instinct that leaves a few human and animal carcasses in its wake, those moments feel more ironically comic than horrific. That may be intentional, and I'll give Benson and Moorhead the benefit of the doubt in that. It's clear that the filmmakers are more interested in exploring how love depends on an awareness of the finite to work, and the supernatural and horrific elements are there to elaborate that investigation. As a result, an intent to keep the fantastic at arm's length may have crept in, intentionally or not. To their credit, the directors are successful in making Spring feel like a fresh take on an old scenario. Poochie's Evan, who is forced to flee the U.S. after a bar brawl lands him in trouble with the police and its vengeance-seeking adversaries, is an attractive, lower-middle-class hero with more than a little poetry in his soul and enough intelligence that it becomes frustrating that he doesn't catch on to Louise's secret sooner. As a couple, Evan and Louise have more than enough charm, and directors Benson and Moorhead use their Italian seaside location to frame the couple's courtship beautifully. As much as my suspension of disbelief was sorely tested, I did not regret hanging out with these people, and I appreciated the director's willingness to forego a definitive ending to their story, an interesting counterpoint in a film that's all about finality. The teens can have their moony eternity of love. Spring, despite its indulgence in the fantastic, gives us something more real to value. It is running in New York now and is also available on demand for us agoraphobics out there. I'm Dan Persons. We are once again going to be archiving these reviews over at my Mighty Movie Podcast website. So if you want to check out what you missed, which admittedly over the past couple of months hasn't been much, please go to mightymoviepodcast.com.
This story is copyrighted.
And once again, this is Hour of the Wolf. My name's... My mouth is dry is what it is. But that is also that my name is Jim Freund. And thank you, Dan. We have missed you. Well, for a while there, I missed me. Such are the... seemingly everlasting fund drives that we end up having to run here on WBAI in New York City. And if you are listening online, over WBAI.org. But at any rate, good morning. Okay, so this is another semi-freeform show. I have to tell you, I feel guilty about that. Because I have some interviews in the can, as it were, things that I need to edit. And once I do that, I will have a few more shows. And some good interviews in there also with people with recent books. And a couple of them that are, like, I have a really great interview from last fall with Genevieve Valentine, but I don't have a new story of hers. I may just end up going for an old recording of a story from her. Problem was is that at the same con where she was guest of honor, I ran in with my microphone just as she was starting, and she looked at me and gave a definite negative sign, which was, I'd rather not be recorded right now. I'm already sitting down. Thank you. Fine. I knew that she was going to be reading later on at KGB Fantastic Fiction, where Gordon Linsner records them for me. Usually I like to go. But since the show was moved to Wednesday nights, it's very difficult for me to go to a Wednesday evening event and hang out, then go all the way uptown here to Harlem, and then head back to the southern end of Brooklyn. I normally drive here and back is the deep, dark secret, and that would be pretty difficult and difficult to pick up and drop off guests if I did it the other way. So, alas, I haven't made that many readings, KGB readings. So, suffice it to say that, of course, as the fates would have it, that was one reading where the recorder failed on Gordon, and I know exactly how he feels, because that has happened to me all too often. So, not only do I have a couple of things in the can, I mean, what's happening this week is insanity. It is, for many of you, Easter. It is, for many of us and you, Passover. Starting Friday night is the first Seder, and then the second night is the second Seder. And the way that that usually works is that the first Seder is for the matriarch or patriarch of a family. And then the second Seder is usually run by the next generation. So I'm very big on cooking, so I'm helping cook for a first Seder for the next generation up in family. And then we have our own. And cooking for that as well, aided by my partner, who I'm so thankful she took care of all the chicken today. The lamb, I get to do the lamb, too. Roasts, huge roasts of lamb. Anyway, suffice it to say, I'm busy. And this week, two podcasts to do. One for Lightspeed Magazine, which I do the post-production on and host, and the other one for Nightmare Magazine, which I simply do the post-production on. By the way, the last Lightspeed Magazine podcast is The New Atlantis by Ursula K. Le Guin, and is just a fabulous, wonderful reading by Gabrielle DeCure. And if you go to lightspeedmagazine.com, you can read the story or listen to the podcast from there. Or if you have, podcasting software, you can go to the podcast derivative place of your choice and hear it there. And this week's Nightmare Magazine is a story called The Island by Desarina Boscovich. It went up just yesterday, as a matter of fact, Tuesday morning. And regular listeners know I'm not a big fan of horror stories, but this one is excellent. This one is really good. And at no point does it rely on the ew factor. It relies instead on the oh my factor. And I won't say too much about it beyond that, other than it's a really good story for that one. It's a slightly different way. It's nightmare-magazine.com. And again, you can read the story or hear the story at either location. The way things work, by the way, is that the editor, John Joseph Adams, has two stories a week for Lightspeed Magazine, and every second week for Nightmare Magazine, and one of the two get chosen for podcast, which are then done by professional actors and sent to me, and I do the editing, and I host Lightspeed and mix the music by Jack Kincaid. It's a lot of fun. It's also a lot of work. And I feel okay in promoting it because, frankly, I do get paid, but boy, it's under minimum wage. Gotta tell you. but it's a showcase, and it's a great place to be. So, and you get it for free. So I have no problems promoting that to you. Let me backtrack, by the way, to Dan Person's review. Disagreed with one thing, or rather wanted to make an exception on one movie that he didn't happen to mention, and that is Only Lovers Left Alive. Two immortals, both vampires, who are very, very much in love with each other from beginning to the end of the film, and they have been through the centuries, and they maintain close friendships through the centuries as well. Another thing, one does sort of rebel against the other, but they end up, it's a mother and daughter story, as a matter of fact. Byzantium, directed by Neil Jordan, starring Gemma Arterton and another actress that I like very much. I'm not into these kinds of things, and I'm certainly not into blood or gore. Having said that, I highly recommend both movies, and I think that they provide the exception to Dan's otherwise quite correct rule about immortals and love. So, Where was I? God only knows. Talking about how busy I was and all the various things. Yes, yes, yes. This month, the month of April, there are so many great readings, so many great events, and I am leveraging them to get interviews and stuff like that. So, let's see. In no particular order, the third Wednesday of the month, there is NYRSF, the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, which I run, will be the 21st. It will not be April 7th, which would be the proper first Tuesday of the month that we do. So we are doing that in order to accommodate the schedule of one of our readers, whose birthday was yesterday, Mr. Delaney, Chip Delaney. Happy birthday. And okay, I'll promote that one first. Why not? It's mine. So that one is April 21st and is Samuel R. Delaney, one of the great, great writers of science fiction and this year's grandmaster. By this year, actually, it was last year, but, you know, he holds the tiara this year until a new one is handed over. But he will always be a grandmaster in so many ways. I first met Delaney when he was here at WBAI working on his 1967 radio drama, The Star Pit, that he narrated and worked with Baird Searles for BAI on, and that was quite an experience for me. I was 13 at the time. And our other reader that day will be Sam J. Miller. I'm doing all this from memory. I should have taken notes, yes. Sam Miller, who, if you have listened to this show regularly over the last, he's been on the show two or three times over the last two or three years, and I might try to get him on again just before the reading to help promote it. He is a Nebula Award nominee this year for his short story, We Are the Cloud, that was published in Ta-da! Lightspeed Magazine. And in fact, yes, we did do a podcast of that one. So you can go again to lightspeedmagazine.com and look for We Are the Cloud by Sam J. Miller. And you can hear the story or read it there online. So those are our two readers. Tuesday, April 21st, the address, 388 Atlantic Avenue. It is a coincidence, well, not a total coincidence, that I am using the same space where WBAI's administrative offices are located. I know of that space thanks to Mitch Cohen, who helped find that space for BAI, and the fact that BAI is there and has a wonderful landlady. And So that's April 21st, 7 p.m., 388 Atlantic Avenue, Sam Delaney, Sam Miller, admission free. So please do show up. We do take donations at the door, by the way, but the admission is free. If you cannot afford the donation, show up anyway, please. Okay. The KGB Fantastic Fiction Series, run by Ellen Datlow and Matt Kressel, himself a Nebula Award nominee this year. Matt, who will be reading for NYRSF later this year, you see, that's how much competition we have, is I'll have their hosts and producers as readers at our events. Why not? And they are going to have James Morrow. Jim Morrow is just a fabulous, fabulous writer of classic, great atheist fiction, just in time for Easter and Passover. And with him, Ken Liu, L-I-U, whose first novel is now coming out. Ken writes, I only know his short stories so far, and I'm also familiar with translations that he has done from Mandarin into English of writers who would otherwise not be found in the in English. So he's an excellent reader. He's a wonderful person. I will be doing interviews with each of them at separate times as they are in town for their KGB fantastic fiction reading. Now, there's yet a third organization. They don't do science fiction readings in general, but they are this time out, and they have coming up, and I'll announce it again next week with all the information, Marla Humans, Kelly Link, and Lev Grossman in sort of a salon style of a reading. So, you know, this is quite the triple threat just for April alone. Then the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings comes back for its normal first Tuesday of every month. On May 5th, our readers will be Cherie Renee Thomas, who was our curator for a couple of years, and is the editor. She's also a poet and a writer. But to me, her great landmark achievement so far is as editor of the book Dark Matter, speculative fiction from the diaspora of African writers, that is to say, Black writers in science fiction, which today is like, yeah, so. Well, when it came out, I could have probably named seven or eight, and now I can name dozens. And I think that that book not only, A, provided a good deal of consciousness raising for me, but B, I think it brought a lot of other people into the field who, people of color writing, who say, oh, gee, this is perhaps a little more inclusive than it has been. So Cherie will be one of the readers, and with her, N.K. Jemison. By the way, what you will notice in all these people that I've got coming up, Samuel R. Delaney, Sam J. Miller, and Nora K. Jemison, and Cherie Renee Thomas, you must have three names to qualify. Okay? Let's be clear on that. So, N.K. Jemison is simply a stellar event. She has written five novels. I think a sixth is coming out very shortly. And every one of the five has been reached top honors and top reviews. And along with a couple of other women, I think, has to bear the very lofty, the very heady and lofty mantle of being the successors to Octavia Butler, Octavia E. Butler. We're dealing with people with three names here. And do so so well. So the Inheritance trilogy of N.K. Jemison and her second duology, which may go further, and there are more books coming out this year. And she's great. She's just cool people. So there. All four people that we've booked are cool people. There. So that's May 5th. And that will also be at 388 Atlantic Avenue. Now, if that isn't enough, Rob Shearman is coming to town. Ellen Datlow, a co-producer of the KGB Fantastic Fiction series, wrote me and said, can you help find an event for Rob Shearman? He's coming to the U.S. Now, that's a familiar name. Why do I know Rob Shearman's name? I look it up. Oh, my God. He writes for Doctor Who. He wrote the episode Dalek. He wrote so many of the I'm forgetting the name of the group that puts out the that put out the Doctor Who radio dramas, Big Finish, and continues to do so. He's written short stories and novels in the Who universe, okay, in the Who universe, and he has written a lot of actual theatrical plays, which is why he's going to be in New York. One of his early plays that had run in England is now coming to the United States. I think it played once in San Diego, but it's New York debut. And so whether we may have a reading for him on April 28th, he will most certainly be on this show April 29th, whether by recording or not, I don't know. The point is we're going to have a lot of great bleep for you over the next few months. So there. Okay. A perennial favorite of this program. There are a few. And I feel only slightly guilty about rebroadcasting this reading, which was done for us, so maybe, 40 years ago? Yeah, about that. But it's also one of the funniest and best, and it fits for comedy, since we just had April 1st, and I'm extending it. Hey, if you're listening out in California via internet, it's only 11 p.m. By the way, this is WBAI New York, but out there, it's still April Fool's Day, and so in that spirit. And I know Harlan is out there. Well, we're going to present Harlan Ellison reading I'm Looking for Kadak, which is also an appropriate story because it's a very, very, very Jewish story, and great science fiction, and just side-splittingly funny. And Ellison, so, yeah, okay, I think I have probably played this somewhere in the last year, and I even warned people on Facebook. I said, if you've heard this recently, if you've heard me play this recently, say so now. Get enough people together for a minion. That's 10 people. And you're going to be hearing about that shortly. And if 10 people object, I'll find something else to do. Well, not only did nobody object, but I got almost that many likes on the various places that I posted that I was thinking of playing this today. So, if you've heard it before, I've heard this 20, 25 times, and you know what? I'm going to be listening to it again because it's just a joy. It is funny. It is, in its way, even heartwarming while it is rude. This is Ellison. If any of you know the works of Harlan Ellison, you will certainly understand that for it to be merely rude means that he's being laid back. But he's also giving one of his great performances as a reader. All done in one take, all unedited, but he did such a superb job for us, and what can I say? It's one of the things that I like to play frequently. And so, as I say, if you've heard it before, don't tune out. Listen to it again. You probably missed something because you were laughing too hard the first time. And if you haven't heard it before, settle back. You're going to have a bumpy but lovely ride. Harlan will, of course, introduce the story himself. I should tell you that it runs for almost 43 minutes, and this is WBAI in New York.
This story is copyright 1973 by Harlan Ellison. And
I was off.
It is a Jewish science fiction story. And it it uses a great many Yiddish words, some of which may not be familiar to you. If they are not familiar to you and they seem to me not to explain themselves in context, I will try and give you an explanation as I go along in the reading. If I fail to do that, call a Jewish friend. Ask them to explain it to you. Failing that, sit and suffer. The name of this story is I'm Looking for Kadak.
You'll pardon me, but my name is Evsis, and I'm standing here in the middle of sand talking to a butterfly. And if I sound like I'm talking to myself, again, you'll pardon, but what can I tell you? A grown person standing talking to a butterfly in sand. So new, what else can you expect? There are times you've got to make adjustments, you've got to let be a little, just to get along, you know what I mean? I'm not all that happy about this, if you want the specific truth. I've learned, God knows I've learned, I'm a Jew, and if there is a thing Jews have learned in over 6,000 years, it's that you got to compromise if you want to make it to 7,000. So let be. I'll talk to this butterfly, hey, you butterfly, and I'll pray for the best. You don't understand. You got that look. Listen, I read once in our book that they found a tribe of Jewish Indians somewhere deep in the heart of South America that was on the earth. The earth, Stummy, it's been in all the papers. So, Jewish Indians, what a thing. And everyone wondered and yelled and made such a mishagas that they had to send historians and sociologists and anthropologists and all manner of very learned types to establish if this was a true thing or maybe somebody was just lying. And what they found was that maybe what had happened was that some galus from Spain, fleeing the Inquisition, he got on board with Cortez and he came to the New World, kind of horror. And when no one was looking, he ran away. So then he got fablonjit, crazy in the head, and he wound up in some little place full of very suggestible native types. And being something of a tumbler, he started teaching them about being Jewish. Just to keep busy, you know what I mean? Because Jews have never been missionaries. None of that converting crap, other, I shouldn't name names, religions need to keep going. Unlike Judaism, which does very cute thank you on its own. And by the time all the smart alecks found the tribe, they were keeping kosher and having brises when the sons were born and observing the high holy days and not doing any fishing on the Shabbos. And it was a very nice thing altogether. So it shouldn't surprise anyone that there are Jews here on Zuchman. Zuchman, with a ch, not a k. You got a no accent like a Litvak. It shouldn't even surprise that I'm a Jew, and I'm blue, and I have 11 arms, thereby defying the law of bilateral symmetry, and I am squat and round and move very close to the ground by a series of caterpillar feet set around the rim of ball joints and sockets on either side of my tuchus, which obeys the law of bilateral symmetry, and when I've wound the feet tight, I have to jump off the ground so they can unwind, and then I move forward again, which makes my movement very peculiar, I'm told by tourists without very much class. Now, in the universal ephemeris, I am referred to as a native of Theta 996, colon, Roman numeral 6, cluster Messier 3 in Canis Venatici. The Roman numeral 6 is Zuchman. A Baedeker from some publisher in the Crab Nebula came here a few turns ago, and he wrote a travel pamphlet on Zuchman, and he kept calling me a Zuchmoid. He should grow in the ground headfirst like a turnip. I am a Jew! I don't know what a turnip is. Now I'm raving. What it'll do to you, talking to a butterfly. I have a mission, and it's making me crazy, giving me spilchens. You could die from a mission like this. I'm looking for Kadak. Hey, you, butterfly. A blink, a flutter, a movement, it wouldn't hurt. You should make an indication you can hear me. I shouldn't sound like a schlemiel telling you all this. Nothing. Wouldn't give me a break. Listen, if it wasn't for that Oiswolf, that bum, Snodel, I wouldn't be here. I would be with my family and my lust nest concubines on Theta 996 Roman numeral 3, what the ephemeris calls Bromios, and what we Jews call Kazrelevka. There is historical precedent for our naming Bromios another name, Kazrelevka. You'll read Shalom Aleichem, you'll understand. A planet for schlamazels. I don't want to discuss it. That's where they're moving us. Everyone went. A few crazy ones stayed. There are always a few crazy ones, but mostly everyone went. Who would want to stay? You see, they're moving, Zuchman. God knows where. Every time you look around, they're dragging a place off and putting it somewhere else. I don't want to go into that. Terrible people. They got no hearts in them. So we were sitting in the yeshiva. The last 10 of us, our proper minion, getting ready to sit shiva for the whole planet. For the last days we would be here, when that Oiswolf, Snodel, had a seizure and he up and died. Oh, a look, a question maybe.
Why were we sitting shiva in the rabbinical college when everybody else was running like a thief to get off the planet before those gunups from the relocation center came with their skyhooks, a glitch if ever there was one, shady, disreputable, to give a yank and drag a place out of orbit and give a shove and jam in big mashugana magnets to float around where a nice, cute world used to be just to keep the cluster running smooth when they pull out a world everything shouldn't go bump together? Why, you ask me so? I'll tell you why. Because... Mister, I won't talk or even flap my wings, butterfly. Shiva is the holiest of the holies. Eh? Because the Talmud says, when you mourn the dead, you get 10 Jewish men who come to the home of the deceased, not 8 or 7 or 4, but 10 men, and you sit, and you pray, and you hold services, and you light the Yahrzeit candles, and you recite the Kaddish, which is every intelligent life form in a cluster, except maybe a nut butterfly knows, is the prayer for the dead in honor and praise of God and the deceased. And why do we want to sit shiva for our world that was such a good home for us for so many turns? Because, and it strikes me foolishness to expect a fakakta butterfly to grasp what I'm trying to say here, because God has been good to us here. And we've property, which now is gone. And we've got families, which now are gone. And we've got our health, which, if I continue talking to you, I'll be losing shortly. And God's name can be hallowed by word of mouth only in the presence of others. Community of worshippers, the congregation, the minion of 10. And that's why. You know, even for a butterfly, you don't look Jewish. So new. Now you understand a little, maybe. Zuchman was the golden of Medina for us, the golden country. It was good here. We were happy here. Now we have to move to Kazralevka, a world for schlamazels. Not even a Red Sea to be parted. It isn't slavery. It's just a world that's not enough. You know what I mean? So we wanted to pay last respects. It's not so crazy. And everyone went... And only the 10 of us left to sit the 7 turns till we went away and Zuchman was ganefed out of the sky to go God knows where. It would have been fine, except for that Snodel, that crazy, who seized up and died on us. So where would we get a 10th man for the minion? There were only 9 Jews on the whole planet. Then Snodel said, there's always Kadak. Shut up, you're dead, Reb Yeshaya said. But it didn't do any good. Snodel kept suggesting Kadak. Now, you should understand, one of the drawbacks of my species, which maybe a butterfly wouldn't know, is that when we die and pass on, they're still talking, nudging. Oh, you want to know how that can be? How a dead Jew can talk through the veil from the other side? What am I, a science authority? I should know how that works. I wouldn't lie on you. I don't know. Always it's been the same. One of us seizes up and dies, and the body squats there, and he doesn't decay the way the tourists do when they get shikar in a blind pig bar in downtown Chomets and stagger out in the gutter and get knocked over by a tumbril on the way to the casinos. But the voice starts nudging. It probably has something to do with the soul, but I wouldn't put a bet on that. All I can say is thank God we don't worship ancestors here on Zuchman, because we'd have such a sky full of nudging old farts telling us how to run our lives, it wouldn't be worth it to keep on this side of the veil. Bless the name of Abraham. After a while, they shut up and they go off somewhere. Probably to nudge each other. They should rest in peace already and stop talking. But Snodel, he wasn't going away. He died. And now he was demanding we not only sit shiva out of courtesy for having lived here so prosperously, but we should also, you shouldn't take it as an imposition, sit shiva for him. He annoys off that Snodel.
There's always Kadak, he said.
His voice came from a nowhere spot in the air about a foot above his body, which was dumped upside down on a table in the yeshiva.
Snodel, if you don't mind, said Shmuel with the one good antenna, would you kindly shut your face and let us handle this?
Then seeing, I suppose, for the first time that Snodel was upside down, he added, but softly, he shouldn't speak ill of the dead. I always said he talked through his tuchus.
I'll turn him over, said Chaya with a defective unwind in his hop. Let be, said Shmuel. I like this end better than the other.
This is getting us nowhere, said Yitzhak. The Ganav's coming a little while to take away the planet. We can't stay, we can't go, and I have lust nest concubines lubricating and lactating on Bromios this very minute.
Kazralevke, said Avram.
Kazralevke, Yitzhak agreed, his prop arm, the one in the back curling an ungrammatical apology.
A planet of 10 million Snodels, said Yankel. There's always Kadak, said Snodel.
Who is this Kadak the Oisbob's babbling about? Asked Meyer Kahaha.
The rest of us rolled our eyes at the remark. 96 tsuris-filled eyes rolled. Meyer Kahaha was always the town shlemiel. If there was a bigger Oisbob than Snodel, it was Meyer Kahaha. Yankel stuck the tip of his pointing arm in Meyer Kahaha's 9th eye, the one with the cataract. Quiet! We sat and stared at each other. Finally, Moshe said,
He's right. It's another tragedy we can mourn on Tisha B'Av. If they have enough turns on Kazrilevka for Tisha B'Av, they'll fall in the right month. But the Oisvov and the Shlomil are right. Our only hope is Kadak. Lightning shouldn't strike me for saying it.
Someone will have to go find him, said Avram.
Not me, said Yankel. A mission for our fool.
Then Reb Yeshaya, who was the wisest of all the blue Jews on Zuchmon, even before the great exodus, one or two of them it wouldn't have hurt if they'd stayed behind to give a little help so we shouldn't find out too late we were in this miserable state of things because Snodel seized up and died. Reb Yeshaya nodded that it was a mission for a fool, and he said,
we'll send Evsis.
Thanks a lot for that, I said. He looked at me with the six eyes on the front, and he said,
Evsis, should we send Shmuel with one good antenna? Should we send Chaim with a defective hop? Should we send Yitzhak, who is so crippled with lust he gets cramps? Maybe we should send Yankel, who is older than even Snodel, and would die from the journey. Then we'd have to find two Jews. Moshe? Moshe argues with everyone. Some cooperation he'd get.
What about Avram, I asked. Avram looked away.
You want I should talk about Avram's problem here in front of an open Talmud? Here in front of the dead, right here in front of God and everyone?
Reb Yeshaya looked stern. Forget it. I'm sorry I mentioned, I said.
Maybe I should go myself. The rabbi should go. Or maybe you'd prefer we sent Meir Kahaha.
You made your point, I said. I'll go. I'm far from a happy person about this. You should know it before I go. But I'll do it. You'll never see me again. I'll die out there looking for that Kadak, but I'll go. Huh? I'll go. I started for the burrow exit of the yeshiva. I passed Yitzhak, who looked sheepish. Cramps, I said. It should only wither up and fall off like a dead leaf. Then I rolled, hopped, and unwound my way up the tunnel to the street and went looking for Kadak. The last time I saw Kadak was 17 turns ago. He was squatting in the synagogue during Purim, and suddenly he rolled into the aisle, tore off his yarmulke, his talis, and his tefillin all at once with his top three arms on each side, threw them into the aisle, yelled he had had it with Judaism and was converting to the Church of the Apostates. That was the last any of us saw of him. Good riddance to bad rubbish, ask me. Kadak, to begin with, was never my favorite person, if you want the truth. He snuffled. Oh, that isn't such an aver. I can see you think I'm making a big something out of a big nothing. Listen, Mr. Terrific, I flap my wings and you should notice me. I'm a person who says what's on his mind. I don't make no mufki-fufki with anyone. You want someone who beats around the bushes, you should talk to that Avram. Me, I'll tell you, I couldn't stand that Kadak snuffling all the time, snuffling. You sit in the shul and right in the middle of the Shema, right in the direct absolute center of Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, comes a snuffle that sounds like a double-sounded tegalomer in a mugwallow. He had a snuffle, made you want to go to the bath. A terrible snuffle, if you listen to me for a minute. It was the kind that Kadak, he wouldn't care when he'd snuffle. When you were sleeping, eating, stooping, making a caca, he didn't care. Would come a blast, a snort, a rotten snuffle could make you want to get rid of your last three or four meals. And forget talking to him. How can you talk to a person who punctuates with a snuffle? So when he went off to convert to the apostates, sure, there was a scandal. There weren't that many Jews on Zuchman. Anything was a scandal. But to be absolutely frank with you, I'll speak my mind no matter what. We were very relieved. To be free of that snuffle was already a nachas, like getting one free, a 7 for 5. So now I had to go all over there and back looking for that terrible snuffle. It was an ugliness I could live without. You should pardon my frankness. But I went to downtown Chometz, and I went over to the Holy Cathedral of the Church of the Apostates. Is that our name? The city was in a very bad way. When everyone had gone to Kazrilevka, they took everything that wasn't bolted down. They also took everything that was bolted down. They also took the bolts. Not to mention a lot of the soil that was all bolted down into. Big holes everywhere. Zuchman was not, at this point in time, I'm telling you about such a cute little world anymore. It looked like an old man with a crank, like a pisher with acne. Very unpleasant. It wasn't a trip I care to talk about. But there was a little left of that crazy fakak, the cathedral still standing. Why shouldn't they let it stand? How much does it cost to make a new one? String. The dummies, they make a holy place from string and spit and bits of dried crap off the streets and their bodies. I don't even want to think about what a sacrilege. I rolled inside, yeah, the smell, you could die from the smell. On Zuchman here, listen, we got us a groundworm. This filthy little segmented thing everyone calls a pincer crusher. Lumbricus rubellus venaticus, my Uncle Beppo, the lunatic zoologist, calls it. It isn't at all peculiar why I remember a foreign name like that. Latin is what it is. I'm a abyssal scholar, too, you know? Not such a dummy as you might think. And it's no wonder Reb Yeshaya sent me on this. It could kill a lesser Jew mission to find Kadak. I mean, I remember because I once had one of them bite me in the tuchus when I went swimming.
And you learn these things. Believe you me, you learn them. This rotten little worm, it's got pinching things in the front and on the sides, and it lies in wait for a juicy tuchus. And when you're just ready to relax in a swim or maybe to take a nap on a picnic, chomp, it goes right for the tuchus. And it hangs on with those triple damned, the entire species should go straight to Gehenna, pinch things, and it makes me sick to remember, but it sucks the blood right out of you, right through your tuchus. And you couldn't get one off. Medical science, as hootsie-tootsie as it is, you could varf from the size of a doctor's bill. Even a hootsie-tootsies can't get one off you. The only thing that does it is you get a musician and he bangs together a pair of cymbals and it falls off. All bloated up with your blood, leaving a bunch of little pinch marks in your tuchus. You're ashamed to let your lust mate see it. And don't ask why the doctors don't carry cymbals with them for such occasions. You wouldn't believe the union problems here on Zuffman, which includes musicians and doctors both. So you better be near a band and not a hospital when a pincer crusher bites you in the tuchus. Otherwise, forget it. And when the terrible thing falls off, it goes pop and it bursts. And all the awful crap it had, and it makes a stink you shouldn't even think about it. The eyes, all 12 of them, could roll up in your head with the smell of all that feh and blood and crap. Inside the cathedral of the Church of the Apostates, the smell, like a million popped pincer crushers. I almost went over on my face from that smell. It took three hands to hold all of my nose. A little whiff shouldn't slip through. I started reeling around, hitting the strings they called walls. Fortunately, I rolled around near the entrance, and I stretched my nose a couple of feet outside, and I took a very deep breath and snapped my nose back and held it and looked around. Look at them. There were still half a dozen of them who hadn't run off to Kazrilevka, all down on their stomachs, and their feet winding up and unwinding very fast up in the air, their faces down in the mud in the crap in front of the altar, doing what I suppose they call praying to that idol of theirs, Seymour or Simon or Shtumi, whatever they call it. I should know the name of a heathen idol, you bet your life never. Better I should know the Latin name of a miserable worm that stinks first, let me tell you. So there they were, and let me assure you, it pained me in several more than a couple of ways to have to go over to them, but listen, I'm looking for Kadak. Hey, I said to one of them. A terrific look at his tuchus I got. Such a perfect tuchus if ever there was one for a pincer crusher to come and chomp. Nothing. Hey, I yelled at a second time. No attention. Crazy with their faces down in the crap. Listen, hey, I yelled at the top of my voice, which isn't such a soft niceness when I'm suffocating, holding my nose with three hands, and I want to get out of that place already. So I gave him a zets in the tuchus. I wound up every foot on the left side and I let it unwind right where a pincer crusher would have brunch. Then the dummy looked up. A sight you could become very ill with. A nose covered with crap from the floor, a bunch of eyes filled with blue jelly, a mouth from out of which could only come heathen hosannas to a dummy idol called Shagets or something, I don't know.
You kicked me, he said.
All by yourself, you figured that out, eh? He looked at me with six and blinked and started to fall over on his punim again, and I started to wind up. I'd give him such a zet that'd kick him into a better life.
We don't accept violence, he said.
Hey, listen, that's a terrific saying. Meanwhile, I don't accept an unobstructed view up your tuchus. So if you want, I should go away and stop kicking you so you can go root around in the dreck some more. What you better do is come up here a minute and talk to me. He kept looking. I wound up tighter. You could hear my sockets creaking. I'm not such a young one anymore. He got up.
What do you want? I'm worshipping to Seymour.
Seymour. Seymour. That's our name for our god. I wouldn't even hire something called a Seymour. You'll worship later. That booby isn't going anywhere.
But Zuchman is.
Very correct. Which is the same reason I got to talk to you now. Time is a thing I got very little of, if you catch my meaning here.
Well, what is it you want, precisely?
Listen to this. Are you ready? A Talmudic scholar, no less. Precisely? Well, Mr. Precisely, I'll tell you what it is precisely I want. You know where it is I can find a no-good snuffler called Kadak? He stared at me with six, then blinked rapidly in sequence. Two and four, three and five, one and six. Then he went back in reverse order.
You have a nauseating sense of humor. May Seymour forgive you.
Then he fell back on his face, his legs up whining and unwinding, his nose deep in a dreck. I say, Kadak? He says, Seymour. I'll give you a Seymour. I started to wind up for a kick. We'll put that mumser in the next time zone when a voice stopped me. From over the side of the stinking cathedral, and you can bet I was turning yellow from not breathing, a woman said,
come outside. I'll tell you about your friend Kadak.
I turned to look, and there was this shiksa all dolled up in such a pile of colored shmatas and baubles and bangles and crap from the floor. I thought to myself, Gavol, this turn I should never have crawled out of the burrow. So anyhow, I followed her outside, thank God, and let my nose extend to its full length and breathe such a deep one, my cheek sacks puffed up like I had a pair of bagels stuffed in. So now this bummerka, this floozy, this painted hussy says to me,
what do you want with Kadak?
Wait a minute, I said. I'll get upwind from you. Meaning no offense, lady, but you smell like your church. I rolled around her and got a little away, and when it was possible to breathe like a bison, I said, what I want
is to go join my lust mates on Bromios. But what I got to do is I got to find Kadak. We need him for a very sacred religious service. You'll excuse me for saying this, dear lady, but you being a Gentile, you wouldn't understand what it is. She batted four eyelids and flapped phony eyelashes on three of them. A lady of easy virtue, a courtesan of the byways, a bummerker.
Would you contribute to a worthy charity to find this Kadak?
I knew it. I knew somewhere on that damned looking for Kadak it would cost me a little something out of pocket. She was looking directly at my pouch. You'll take a couple of coins, is that right?
It isn't exactly what I was thinking of, she said, still looking at my pouch.
And I suddenly realized, with what I'll tell you honestly was a chill, that she was cross-eyed in four of her front six. She was staring at my pupik. What? I'm trying to tell you, Butterfly, that she wasn't staring at my pouch, which was hanging to the left side of my stomach. She was staring with that cockeyed four at my cute little pupik. What? You'll forgive me, Mr. Silent Butterfly, with a very dumb expression. I should know that butterflies don't have pupiks. A navel. A belly button. Now you understand what it is, a pupik. What? Maybe I should get gross and explain to a butterfly that stoops flowers that we have sex through our pupiks. The female puts her long middle finger, a bottom arm on the right side, straight into the pupik, and she goes mufki-fufki, and that's how we stoop. You needed that, is that right? You know how we do it. A filth you are, Butterfly, a very dirty mind. But not as dirty as that Nafka, that saucy baggage, that whore of Babylon. Listen, I said, meaning no offense, lady, but I'm not that kind of a person. I'm saving myself for my lust mates, you know what I mean? I'm sure you'll understand. Besides, meaning no offense, I don't shtup with strangers. It wouldn't be such a good thing for you either, believe me. Everybody says FCs is a rotten shtup. I got very little feeling in my pepper. You wouldn't like it, not even a little. Why don't I give you a few nice coins? You could use them on Bromios. You could maybe set yourself up in business there, a pretty lady such as yourself. God shouldn't strike me down with a bolt of lightning in the tuchus for telling this filthy mind cockeye heathen Nafka what a cutesy she is.
You want to find this Kadak?
She asked, staring straight at two things at the same time. Please, lady, I said. My nose started running.
Don't cry, she said. Samul is my god. I trust in Samul.
What the hell has that got to do with anything?
We are the last of the faithful of the church. We plan to stay on Zuchman when they relocate it. Samuel has decreed it. I have no hope of living through it. I understand cataclysms are commonplace when they pull a planet out of orbit.
So run, I said. What kind of dummies are you?
We are the faithful.
Listen, it gave me pause. Even Gentiles, even nutcases like these worshippers of Shmuel, whoever, even they got to believe. It was nice, in a very dumb way. So, what has all that got to do in even the slightest way with me, lady?
I'm horny.
Why not go in your cathedral there and strip one of your playmates?
They're worshipping.
To that statue that looks like a big bug picking its nose with the dreck and the crap and the mud all over it?
Don't speak disrespectfully of Samuel.
Yeah, listen, I'll cut out my tongue.
That isn't necessary. Just stick out your navel.
Lady, you got a dirty mouth.
You want to know where Kadak is?
Listen, I won't tell you what nasty indignities came next. It makes me very ashamed to even think about it. She had a dirty fingernail. So I'll tell you only that when she was done ravaging my pupik and left me lying there against a mud wall of a building, the pink schmutz running down my stomach, I knew that Kadak had been as lousy an apostate as he had been a Jew. One afternoon, just like in the synagogue years before, he ran amok and he started biting the statue of that bug god they got. Before they could pry him off, he had bitten off the kneecap of Shmugel. So they threw him out of the church. This Nafka knew what had happened to him because he had used her services, you could brech from such a thought, and he still owed her some coins. Yeah? So she'd followed him around, trying to get him to pay, and she'd seen he'd bounced from religion to religion until they accepted him as a slave of the rock. So I got up and I went to a fountain and washed myself the best way I could and said a couple of quick prayers that I wouldn't get knocked up from that dirty finger, and I went looking for the slaves of the rock, still looking for that damned Kadak. I walked with an uneven roll, hop, unwind. You would, too, if you'd just been ravished, Butterfly. Wait a minute. Just a second. You'd think, how would you feel if a flower grabbed you by the tuchus and stuck a pistol and stamen in your pupik? What? Oh, that's terrific. Butterflies don't have pupiks. Talking to you, standing here in sand, is not necessarily the most sensational thing I've ever done, you want to know. The slaves of the Rock were all gathered in a valley just outside the city limits of Chumetz. The governors wouldn't let them inside the city. Who can blame them? If you think those apostates were pukers, you should only see the rocks. Such cuties. It is the Varf.
big rocks they turn themselves into, with tongues like strings, 6 or 7 feet long, all rolled up inside. And when a krendel or a znieg or a buckfly goes whizzing past, and slurp, out comes that ugly tongue like a shot, and snags it and wraps around it, comes whipping back and smashes the bug all over the rock. And then the rock gets soft and spongy like a piece of rotten fruit and absorbs all the dreck and crap and awfulness squished there. Such terrifics, those rocks. Just the kind of thing I would expect a Kadak to be when he couldn't stand being himself no more. Thank you also very greatly, Reb Sheshaya, for this looking mission. So I found the head rock, and I stood there in that valley, all surrounded by rocks, going slurp and squish and sucking up bug food. This was not the best part of my life I'm telling you about. How do you do? I figured it was the most polite way to talk to a rock. What do I know?
How did you know I was the chief slave?
The rock said. You had the longest tongue. Slurp. A snig on the wing, cruising by, humming a tune, minding its own business, got it right in the punim, a tongue like a wet noodle, splat right in the punim, and a quick overhead twist that squish all over the rock. It splatted on me, gooey and altogether puke-making. Definitely not the kind of individual to have a terrific dinner out with. The gederim was all over me.
Excuse the mess,
said the chief slave. He really sounded sorry. Think nothing, I said. That was a very cute little overhand twist you gave it there at the last minute. He seemed flattered.
You noticed that, did you?
How could I help? Such a class move.
You know, you're the first one who's ever noticed that. There have been lots of studies made by all kinds of foreigners from other worlds, other galaxies even, but never once did one of them notice that move. What did you say your name was?
The bug ooze was dripping down my stomach. My name is Evsis, and I'm looking for a person who used to be a person named Kadak. I was given to understand that he'd become a rock a few years ago. I have a great need to find this Kadak rock. He should drop dead already. Such a rotten time he's been making for me.
Listen, said the chief slave, as the remains of the znig oozed down through the spongy surface.
I like you. Have you ever thought of converting?
Forget it.
No, really, I'm serious. To worship the rock is such an enriching experience, it really isn't smart to dismiss it without giving it a try. What do you say?
I figured I had to be a little smartsy then, just a little. Say, listen, I wish I could. You got no idea what a nice proposition that is you're making to me. And in a quick second, I'd take you up on it. But I got this one bissel tot of a problem.
Would you like to talk about it?
A psychiatrist rock yet. I really needed this. I'm afraid from bugs, I said. He didn't say anything for a moment. Then,
I see your point. Bugs are a very big part of our religion.
Yeah, listen, I can see that.
Ah, well, I'm sorry for you, but let's see if I can help you. What did you say his name was?
Kadak.
Oh, yeah, I remember now. What a creep.
That's him.
Let me see now, said the rock. If I recall correctly, we threw him out of the order for being a disruptive influence. Oh, it must have been 15 years ago. He used to make the ugliest noises I've ever heard out of a rock.
Snuffling.
I beg your pardon?
Snuffling is what he did. A terrible snort noise, all wet and cloggy, could make you sick to be near it.
Yes, that was it. So what happened to him? I'm afraid to ask. He reconstituted his atoms and became just like you again.
Not like me, please.
Well, I mean the same species.
And he went off.
Yes. He said he was going to try the fleshists.
I wish you hadn't told me that.
I'm sorry.
I sat down, settled my tuchus right down between my ribs, drew up my legs and dropped my head into a half dozen of my hands. I was very glum.
Would you like to sit on me?
The rock asked. It was a nice offer, you know. Thanks, I said politely, looking at the last slimy ooze of the znig on the rock. But I'm too miserable to be comfortable.
What do you need him for? He asked.
So I explained the best I could. This was, after all, to a rock, a piece of stone, even if it could talk, about the minion of 10. The chief slave asked me why 10. So I said, on the earth, a long time ago. You know about the earth, right? Right, well, on the earth, a long time ago, God was going to give a terrific zets to a place called Sodom. What it was, this Sodom, was a whole city full of fleshists. Not a nice place.
I can't conceive of an entire city of fleshists,
the rock said.
That's rather an ugly thought.
Yeah, well, that's the way God looked at it. We were both quiet for a while, thinking about that. So, anyhow, I said, Abraham, blessed be his name, who was this very holy Jew, even if he wasn't blue, you shouldn't hold that against him.
I won't.
Hmm? Yes. All right, well, Abraham pleaded with God to save Sodom.
Why did he do that? A city full of fleshists. Yuck.
How do I know? He was holy, that's all. So God must have thought that was a little meshuggah, a little crazy. Also, you know, God is no dummy. And he told Abraham he'd spare Sodom if Abraham could find 50 righteous men living there.
Just men? What about women?
There isn't scripture on that one.
Sounds like your God is a sexist.
At least you'll pardon my frankness now, but at least he isn't a thing that lies in a valley for birds to make caca on.
That's rather rude of you.
I'm terrible sorry, but it isn't nice to call the one true God a rotten name.
I was only asking.
Well, it isn't too classy for a rock to ask them kinds of questions. Now, do you want to hear this or don't you?
Yes, sure, but...
But what?
Why did this God haggle with this Abraham? Why didn't he just tell him he was going to do it and then do it?
I was getting pretty upset, you know what I mean? It was because Abraham was a mensch, a real terrific person, a snappy dresser, a good dancer. That's why. How do I know, okay?
The rock didn't answer. I guess he was sulking. So, okay, let him sulk.
Then Abraham said, okay, what if I can only find 40 righteous men? And God said, okay, let's be 40. So Abraham said, what if only 30? And God said, no, let be 30 already. And then Abraham said, what if only 20? And God started yelling, all right, stop nudging me, let be 20.
Let me guess, the rock said. Abraham said 10, and your God got really mad and said 10 was it and no further. And that's how you came up with 10 men for the congregation.
You've heard it, I said. The rock was silent again. Finally, he said,
listen, I like your idea of religion. I'm not altogether happy being a slave of the rock, even if I am the chief rock. How about if I converted and came back with you and made the 10th for the minion?
Well, I thought about that for a minute. Well, I said slowly, the Talmud does say 9 free men and a slave may be reckoned together for a quorum. But against that is quoted that Rabbi Eliezer went into a synagogue and he didn't find 10 there, so he freed his slave and with him completed the number. But if there had only been 7 and he had freed 2 slaves, it wouldn't have been kosher. But with 1 freed slave and a rabbi, it made 10. So clearly, as all agree, 8 free men and 2 slaves would not answer the purpose. But if you just put yourself in my place for a moment, you're not, even remotely speaking, my slave. I mean, you're the slave of the rock, whatever that means. And besides, it takes a long time to convert. Can you speak Hebrew? Yiddish, even a little?
What's Hebrew?
Forget it. How about keeping kosher?
What are they? I'll keep them if that's part of the program. After all, when you've been a rock, eating bugs all your life, keeping some kind of pet doesn't sound too difficult.
It was hopeless. It was hopeless. For a moment there, I gave it a maybe, you know what I mean? But the more I thought about it, even if I could summon up the chutzpah to go back to Reb Yeshaya with a rock, not with a kadak, it wouldn't work. This rock was a nice enough fellow, you know what I mean? But even as I sat there pondering, he shot out that tongue of his and snared a buck fly and whipped it in that move he thought was such a sensational thing, and he splatted it all over the place and started eating it. And clearly, very clearly, Genesis 9:4 forbade animal blood to all the seed of Noah. So how could I bring a rock back and say, here, I freed this slave of the rock, and he'll be the 10th man, and then right in the middle of the Adonai, out would come that crummy tongue and eat a bug off the wall. Forget it. Listen, I said, as gentle as I could, I didn't want to hurt his feelings. It's a strictly great offer you've made, and under other circumstances, I would take you up on that. You know what I'm saying? But right now, I'm really pressed for time, and it would take too long for you to learn Hebrew, so let's let it sit for a while. I'll get back to you, okay? He wasn't happy about that, I could tell. But he was a real man. She told me he understood, and he wished me good luck with the fleshists, and he let me run away fast. I could see his point, though. And I was very sorry about his not being a possible. I mean, how would you like it to sit all day baking in the sun with birds making pish in your face, and the best you got to look forward to is a juicy bug? And if I'd known what I had coming, what tsuras, I'd gladly, only happily, as you can believe it, taken that rock back with me, bug, dreck, and all. Believe me, there are worse things than a rock that eats bugs. I'll make a long story short. I followed the trail of that putz, kadak, from the pit of the fleshists, where I lost the use of my pipik, all my coin, the sight of one eye in the back, the second arm on the left side of my yarmulke, to the embarkation dock at the spaceport, where the sect called the denigrators were getting on board ships for that bromios, where I got beat up so bad I crawled away, to the lava beds where the true believers of suffering were doing their last rites before leaving, where I suffered first-degree miserable and such a pain you wouldn't accept over half my poor body, to the tabernacle of the mouth, where some big-deal prophet that was all teeth bit off the tip of one antenna, God knows why, maybe out of pique at being left behind, to the caucus race of the malforms, where I fit right in, as crapped up and bloody as I was, to the lair of the blessed profundity of the unspeakable thrill, which I could not, even if I had several mouths pronounced, but they punched and kicked me anyhow, really sensational people, to the arch-druid of nothingness,
always following that miserable creep Kadak from religion to religion. Let me tell you, no one had a good word for that schmuck. Not even the worst of those heathens. And it was there, horror, that the archdruid told me the last he'd seen of Kadak was 10 years earlier, when he had changed him into a butterfly and sent him out into the desert to hopefully drop dead in the heat. Which is why, finally, I'm standing here talking to dumb creep butterfly. So now I've told it all, and you see what a puke condition I'm in. Don't for a minute think that Avram or those others will respect me for what I did. They'll only nudge me about how long it took, and that's why you got to come back with me. Not a void, huh? Not a sound through all this. Not a flap or a flitter or a how are you, FCs. Nothing. Look, I'm not going to tumble with you, mister. I can't make up my mind what kind of religion I want to be, butterfly. You think I stood here all this time, sinking in up to my rims in sand, just to tell you a cute story? I know you're Kadak, ha-ha! And how do I know? Go ahead, snuffle like that again and ask me how I know! Come on, you'll either come by yourself, or I'll drag you by your wings. You know, for a butterfly, you're not even a nice-looking butterfly. You're an ugly, is what you are. And as for being a Jew, only that by birth, such a disgrace to the entire Blue Jews and Zuchman. As you can see, I'm getting angry. You've gotten me raped, crapped on, burned, maimed, crippled, blinded, insulted, run around, exposed to heathens, robbed, sunburned, covered with bug schmutz, altogether miserable and unhappy. And I'll tell you very frankly, you'll come with me, Mr. Kadak, or I'll choke you dead right here in this fablunged... Now, what do you say? I thought that's what you'd say. Here he is. Yankel didn't believe it. Chaim laughed. Shmuel started to cry, his nose running green. Snodel coughed. And Reb Yeshaya hung his head.
I should have sent Avram, he said.
Avram looked away. Like a dead leaf it should fall off. Here he is what I said. And here he is what it is, I said. This is your Kadak. May he rot in his cocoon. Then I told him the whole story. At least they had the grace to be amazed.
This is what makes the minion,
Moshe said.
This!
Make him change back, and that's him, I said. I wash my hands of it. I went over in a corner of the shul and settled down. Was their problem now. For hours they went at him. They tried everything. They threatened him. They begged him. They implored him. They intimidated him. They cajoled him. They schmachled him. They insulted him. They slugged him. They chased his tuchus all over the shul. Sure, of course. Wouldn't you know that rotten Kadak wouldn't change back? At last he found a thing he wanted to be. A dumb creep butterfly. With a snuffle. Still with a rotten snuffle. Did you ever know how much worse a butterfly snuffles than a person? You cut plots from it. And finally, when they couldn't get him to change back. And if you want to know the truth, I don't think he could change back after that weird Nick Booby Archdruid changed him. They held him down, and Reb Yeshaya made the rabbinical decision that his presence was enough in this great emergency. So Meir Kahaha sat on him, and we started to sit Shiva, finally, for Zuchman and for Snodel. And then Reb Yeshaya got a terrible look on his face, and he said,
Oh, my God.
What? What, I yelled. What now, what? Very softly, Reb Yeshaya asked me,
FCs, how long ago did the Archdruid say he changed Kadak into this thing?
10 years ago, I said, but what? And I stopped. And I sat down again. And knew we had lost. And we would still be there when the Ganavs came to rip the planet out of orbit. And we would die along with the crazies in the apostate cathedral and the Nafke and the Rock and the Archdruid and everyone else who was too nuts to get safely away the way we were supposed to.
What's the matter? Asked Meir Kahaha the Oisvok. What's wrong? Why does it matter? He's been a butterfly for 10 years.
Only 10 years, said Shmuel. Not 13, Schmuck, only 10, said Yankel, sticking his pointing arm in Meir Kahaha's ninth eye.
We looked at Meir Kahaha till the light dawned, even for him.
Oh, my God, he said, and rolled over on his side.
The butterfly, that miserable Kadak, fluttered up and flew around the shul. No one paid any attention to him. It had all been in vain. Scripture says, very clearly, there should be no mistake,
that all 10 of the participants of our minyan have to be over 13 years old. At 13 for a Jew, a boy becomes a man.
Today I am a man.
It's an old gag. Ha ha, very funny. It's the reason for the bar mitzvah. 13, not 10. Kadak wasn't old enough. Still dead, still lying on his face. Snodel began weeping. Reb Yishai and the other 7, the last blue Jews on Zuchman, now doomed to die without ever again gumming their lust nest concubines, they all slumped into seats and waited for destruction. I felt worse than them. I hurt in more places. And then I looked up and began to smile. I smiled so wide and so loud, everyone turned to look at me.
He's gone crazy, said Chaim.
It's better that way, said Shmuel. He won't feel the pain.
Poor Evsis, said Yitzhak.
Dummies, I shouted, leaping up and rolling and hopping and unwinding like a tumbler. Dummies, 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 even you. Reb Yishai, you're a dummy, dummy, dummies. Ha ha, we're all dummies. Is that a way to talk to a rabbi, said Reb Yishai. Sure it is, I yowled, reeling and rocking. Sure it is, sure it is, sure it is, sure it is. Marika Haha came and sat. Get off me, you schlemiel! I know how to save us. It's been here all the time. We never needed that creep snuffle butterfly Kadak. So he got off me, and I looked at them with great pleasure, because I was about to demonstrate that I was a folksmensch of the first water. And I said, under our ruling in Tractate Berakot, 9 Jews and the holy ark of the law containing the Torah may together, hey, Nunu, do you get what I'm saying here? May together be considered for congregational worship. And Josiah kissed me. Evsis, Evsis, how did you remember such a thing? You're not a Talmudic scholar. How did you remember such a wonderful thing? Reb Josiah hugged and kissed and babbled in my face at me.
I didn't, I said. Kadak did.
And they all looked up as I looked up. And there was that not such an altogether worthless, after all, Kadak, sitting up on top of the holy ark, the Aron HaKodesh, the sacred cabinet holding the sacred scrolls of the Lord, sitting up there, a butterfly, always to remain a butterfly, sitting and beating his wings frantically, trying to let someone know what he knew, something even a rabbi had forgotten. And when he came down to perch on Reb Yishai's shoulder, we all sat down and rested for a minute. And then Reb Yishaya said,
now we will sit Shiva. 9 men, the holy ark, and 1 butterfly make our minyan.
And for the last time on Zuchman, which means look for me, we said the holy words. Last time for the home we had, the home we would leave. And all through the prayers, there sat Kadak flapping his dumb wings. And you want to know a thing? Even that was a machaya, which means a terrific pleasure.
Take off your shoes. This place you're standing, it's all. Take off your shoes. The spot you're standing, it's holy ground. These words I heard in my burning bush. This place you're standing, it's holy.
Looking for Kadak, read by the author Harlan Ellison, from 1973. This is WBAI in New York City, Hour of the Wolf. I am Jim Freund, and these are, believe it or not, the Klezmatics, singing a song with lyrics by Woody Guthrie.
It's holy ground. God made
Well, you can't expect the Klezmatics to sound all clarinet-y all of the time, can you? That's from their album, Wonder Wheel, which has unfinished, well, finished lyrics by Woody Guthrie, but not necessarily tunes put to them. They did that themselves for the most part. This is WBAI in New York City. Listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio broadcasting at 99.5 FM. The program is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. And we have, 9 minutes left, but with outro music, about 5 minutes left. Although I haven't seen hide nor hair of Lister, I certainly hope that he comes here soon. And if you'd like to call up and talk for a minute or two, we have, a minute or two at 212-279-29. What am I saying? 212-209-2950. I'm time slipping again. Good morning. You're on the radio. Whoops. Hello. Turn down your radio, please. Nope. I guess you're just a tone. Oh, well. Okay. I don't know if that problem is on our phone line or the person who was calling in, but so mote it be. Next week on the program, I can't actually tell you what I will be doing for sure next week. As I say, I have a few things in the can, and once my life starts, actually, so many things are going crazy through Sunday, that come Monday, I'll probably be dealing with everything that I've put off because of all the various things that I have been doing. I hope you enjoyed that story by Ellison. As I say, it's always one of my favorites. Okay, let's try that phone line again, see what it conjures up. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning, Robert.
Can I stop laughing now?
No, you can't.
You realize you could play that 25 to the 25th power. You could play that 30 years from now, and it is still absolutely a jocular hoot.
I was thinking that because that was recorded, or at least written in 1973, and recorded around 73 or 74. So it's a couple of years ago.
42.
And it holds up. It totally
really
holds
does.
Up.
You know, it's funny. I took down all the Yiddish words in the story. By the way, you know what happens to
in the book that it comes from, Wandering Stars,
the lead
by
story. Yes.
Edited by, it's not the lead story. It's the last. No, it's the last story.
Oh, is it the last story? Okay.
He includes a glossary in
it. He does. And it took me 3 books. I went through Audible's Treasury. I went through the Big Book of Jewish Humor. I went through, the Joys of Yiddish. And there were a couple of words that a female reader had to explain. Let's just leave it at that. But it is a great story. And I will just wish you, because you have probably other calls, may your Seder be blessed, and may you and Barbara be blessed for the season, and may someone in your Seder sing joyous songs like the Haggadah.
Thank you very much.
Good night.
Good night. All righty. And, there was another call, but it zipped away. We have one of the weirder phone systems here. Every time I mention that, then within hearing of our engineers, they go, "What are you talking about?" And it's like, well, it always has been. Why stop it now? And they, what can I say? Let's see, 2:55:05 and 2:56:30, about 90 seconds from now, I am due to play my outro music, but no hide nor hair of our 3 o'clock program, Burn Baby Burn Clapper with Lister, who should be here by now. No doubt subways. He has a long way to travel here, and there have been problems. Another reason why I choose not to travel here by public transportation. So, let me mention that I mentioned my reading series earlier, New York Review of Science Fiction Readings. If you want to keep up with that, send me an email to jim@ourwolf.com, HOURWOLF.com, and I'll put you on my mailing list. I do not share that mailing list. It stays private, and we put out about 2 pieces of mail a month. Or you can join the group on Facebook, NYRSF Readings on Facebook. There's also, an Hour of the Wolf group on Facebook. So you'll get occasional notices about the show, and you get to talk back there. This has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Thank you for listening. I just took a look, and there was Lister right in front of me. Everybody sing hallelujah. So I'll be back next week from 5 to 7 a.m., and we need not worry at all about the show coming up. It's going to be great. Have a good Easter, have a good Passover, have a good time, whichever way you swing, especially if you don't go for any of those. Be good to each other. Thanks for listening. Good morning.
Expressing myself, torching the symbol of oppression. Let that be a lesson to those that want suppression of the truth. put on hold. The bull lose control, so they force obedience. Have you pledge allegiance to a piece of cloth? That's all the way I see it. Well, I'm going off berserk, cause the system work to jerk. My people, the people, all around the pig work. Tell me I'm wrong, though, that's my right in this right in the Constitution. Yo, that's an illusion, huh? Suckers trying to change and rearrange. They say that I'm free, but they sure have a strange way of showing it. But I'm blowing the cover, the red, white, the blue, but the black for the brother. And I'm the lover of this flag, like many others take the same turn. Like me, they yearn for the flag too. Born the material of the imperialist in a blazing inferno. Cause my hurt is eternal. The American dream, a nightmare. I want the people to wake up to the lies, the pigs make up. Imperialistic swans that I grind into bacon bits. Call the fist, cause I ain't taking shit. I'm not a Nazi or a Cappy or a Farmy, but you want me in prison? Cause I'm busy attacking with the flag. I ragging and snagging and dragging and rip it to shreds. Cause I'm too black, too strong, too red, too dread. And I'm dreaded cause I make the pigs tremble when I burn a symbol. Yo, I'm quick and nimble like Jack, but I'm a black man attacking the flag. I keep my torch handy, I'm no Yankee Doodle Dandy. So just hand me a flag from the fastest and watch me burn that piece of to ashes. Cause the real meaning is what the masses must learn. That's why the red, white, and blue must burn, baby, burn. Let's find the people who hate this. These are the places we'll hit.
Panama, talking about Peru, Azania, Brixton, Belfast, can't forget Korea, Beirut, can't forget Haiti, Iran, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Mexico. Talk about uptown Harlem, New York City, y'all. And Nicaragua, East and South Central LA, California, IA, Miami. Do or die, Bed-Stuy. Never ran, never will, Brownsville. Boogie down, South Bronx.
My man Joey to jail and now they gotta be caught because he burned the flag. That's the name of the game. Well, I quit playing. I doubt the suckers want you to hear what I'm saying about this nation. Freedom supposed to be the format, but I step on your flag like it's a floor mat. Maim and mangle, star spangled. I'm not trying to diss you. I use the flag like toilet tissue to wipe my black ass. What? You think that I'm a jackass? I see a flag and I attack fast with some fire. My desire to burn what Betty Ross sold up. The truth I show up about America, America, home of the brave, land of the free. Boom! This is the home of the slave. Now hold on just a mother minute. You gave me freedom of speech in the First Amendment. So why trying to scold me when I tossed the flag? I'm only doing what you told me. You don't like it, so what? I'm not scared of you. Your flag, America too. See, I made up this new rule and I want y'all to learn it. Strike a match to the American flag and burn.
Thank you. 99 Cinco List Alive, WBAI. 7 minutes after 3 o'clock, 50 million victims of democracy voted in this dictatorship of the general that wanted to kill fella. How soon you forget, right? Just like how they wanted to kill, or actually kill, Ken Sawa-Wiwa. Yeah.
Everybody run, run, run.
Yeah.
Everybody scatter, scatter.
Yeah.
Some people lost some bread.
Yeah.
Someone nearly died.
Yeah.
Someone just died.
Yeah.
Police, they come, army, they come.
Yeah.
Confusion everywhere.
Yeah.
7 minutes later, all don't cool down, brother. Police don't go away. Army don't disappear. Them leave sorrow, tears and blood.
Them regular trade.
Them leave sorrow, tears and blood.
Them regular trade.
Them regular trademark.
Them regular trademark.
That is why.
Yeah.
Everybody run, run, run.
Yeah.
Everybody scatter, scatter.
Yeah.
Someone nearly died.
Yeah.
Some people lost some bread.
Yeah.
Someone just died.
Yeah.
Police, they come, army, they come.
Yeah.
Confusion everywhere.
Yeah.
7 minutes later, all don't go down, brother. Police don't go away, army don't disappear. Them live sorrow, tears and blood.
Them regular trademark.
Them live sorrow, tears and blood.
Them regular trademark.
Them regular trademark.
Them regular trademark.
La 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 la. My people say they fear too much. We fear for the pain we no see. We fear for the air around us. We fear to fight for freedom. We fear to fight for liberty. We fear to fight for justice. We fear to fight for happiness. We always get reason to fear. We no one die, we no one wound, we no one quench, we no one go. Get one child, a mad different house, a bad different house. I won't build a house, I don't build a house. I know I won't quench, I won't enjoy, I know I won't go. So policeman go slap your face, you know go talk. Army man go weep your ass, you go they look like donkey. Rhodesia they do them own, all it just they have for nothing. South Africa they do them own. Them live sorrow, tears and blood.
Them regular trademark.
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 Regular trademark.
Them regular trademark.
That is why.
Yeah.
Everybody run, run, run.
Yeah.
Everybody scatter, scatter.
Yeah.
Some people lost some bed. Someone nearly died.
Yeah.
Police, they come, army, they come.
Yeah.
Confusion everywhere.
Yeah.
So, time when they go. Time no wait for nobody. Like that. But police go they come. Army go they come. With confusion. In style. Like this. Everybody run, run, run. Everybody scatter, scatter. Some people lost some bread. Someone nearly died. Someone just died. Police, they come, army, they come. Confusion everywhere. 7 minutes later,
yeah.
All don't cool down.
trademark. Them live sorrow, tears, and blood. That is why everybody run, run, run. Everybody's scatter, scatter. Some people lost some bread. Someone nearly died.
Take off your clothes when you're dancing to this music right here. 14, 13, 14 minutes after 3 o'clock. Yeah. Victims of democracy voted in this clown, this oppressive clown, the general.